KHUM is freeform independent radio from Humboldt County, California. Learn more at khum.com.
You're listening to 104.3 and 104.7 KHUM, Cotton, Eureka, Arcata, and streaming to the world over at khum.com. It is noon here on Wednesday, and that means it's time for Coastal Currents, which is brought to you by Glasshouse Garden Supply. And I have my new host. This is your first week as a host with us, like as the main host of Coastal Currents, if you will. This is Annie, of course I'm messing it up right away, Annie Maher. And who is the programs coordinator over at the NEC.
Yeah, thank you for having me, Bailey.
Of course, thanks for being the new host.
And we've got Adam Frimidig today, an environmental scientist at the California Department of Fish and Wildlife Marine Program, right?
Yes, Marine Region.
Marine Region, okay, awesome. And we're going to talk a little about MPAs.
Yeah, it's nice to meet you both.
Thank you. To have you in here. It's been a blast so far already, and I'm excited for our conversation to extend over the air.
Mm-hmm. So I'm sure many of our listeners have heard a lot about marine protected areas in the past, but I thought really quick we could just go over really briefly again, what is a marine protected area? Why are they important? That kind of thing.
Sure. Yeah. So marine protected areas come in a variety of shapes and forms, and they're established for a lot of different reasons throughout the country, throughout the world. But marine protected areas here in California are discrete geographic marine or estuarine areas with distinct boundaries that are designated by law to protect marine life, habitats, and ecosystems. And there's a variety of them in California as well. As you probably know, we have 124 up and down the coast. They're found throughout the mean high tide line out to 3 nautical miles offshore. And so we have a lot of them. And there's 2 general types. There's the no-take MPAs, and then there's limited-take MPAs.
And part of having an MPA requires monitoring and management and things mm-hmm. like that.
What is a no-take or a limited-take?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked. So okay. We have, there's technically 5 designation types right now, but they're kind of generally split into 2 types. So no-take means, as the name implies, there is no forms of take allowed.
Like fishing or?
Mostly fishing, yeah. And so we have state marine reserves, which is your primary type of that. And then limited take MPAs means that they allow for specific commercial or recreational activities within their boundaries. So for example, here on the North Coast, we have multiple state marine conservation areas, which allow for commercial and recreational crabbing, dungeness crabs.
Okay, sweet. And what's one example of that?
Of a state marine conservation area?
Well,
nearest here would probably be Samoa State Marine Conservation Area. That's up near Malil Dunes. And then we have a number of state marine reserves off the coast here, the Lost Coast. We have 20 MPAs in the North Coast, and there's 13 state marine conservation areas, and then 5 state marine reserves.
That's a lot.
Or 6, I should
that
say.
Is a lot.
Sorry.
Wow. And so part of your job requires looking into the monitoring and management of them.
Yes. So to manage them, we have a MPA management program, and it's a statewide program. It consists of 4 core components. So it's pretty broad, and there's a lot of work that goes into it. There's outreach and education. There's research and monitoring, as you mentioned. There's enforcement and compliance, and there's policy and permitting. So all 4 of those components are a direct reflection of the goals and requirements of the Marine Life Protection Act. So that's the overriding legislation which has required these MPAs. And with respect to research and monitoring, we have a monitoring program that's across the state. And so that's probably what you're familiar with. There's 2 phases, phase 1 regional baseline monitoring, and then phase 2 long-term monitoring across the state.
Totally. And you guys just kind of wrapped up phase 1, right?
We are almost wrapping up phase 1. Yes. 2017 was a very busy year for the North Coast in particular. It was the last of 4 regional baseline monitoring efforts. And so the data was collected primarily on the North Coast between like 2013 and 2016, although some projects incorporated longer term data sets as well. And then each of them had to do a peer-reviewed technical report that was earlier this year. And there was a symposium that Humboldt State put on in May. We produced a state of the region summary document. We, meaning Department of Fish and Wildlife, Ocean Protection Council, and Ocean Science Trust. And then we had some community gatherings to share the information as well. So this all happened over the course of 2017. That's marking the end of the North Coast baseline effort, and that marks the end of the entire statewide effort, if that makes sense. So these regional baseline monitoring efforts have started in the central, they went to the north central coast, it went to the south coast, and now up here, just like when they were adopted up and down the state. So the official completion of that process will be when we bring those recommendations in the State of the Region report to the California Fish and Game Commission early next year.
So a lot got done this year.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
2017 was busy for the North Coast.
I was curious when you talk about baseline monitoring, who does that monitoring and how does that kind of get done? That, because when you say baseline monitoring, you mean seeing what is already there, right, in these MPAs. So is that taking into account like all of the biodiversity or kind of the what is in the MPA? Like, what does that baseline monitoring kind of entail?
Yeah, so the overall goal for baseline monitoring is to establish a baseline of ecological and socioeconomic conditions throughout the region.
So on the coast also, like the whole region of that?
Yeah, throughout the whole region and, of course, throughout the coast, because we did this in the other regions as well. So it's a broad, comprehensive effort, which involved, you know, I think it was 7 to 11 different projects in each region. The North Coast had 11 projects, for example. And so we studied everything from a whole bunch of different ecosystems, everything from rocky intertidal and nearshore subtidal and intertidal habitats, estuarine, human uses, incorporated traditional ecological knowledge, oceanographic patterns across the region. So as much of a comprehensive, broad, sweeping monitoring effort that you could have. That was the
goal. And this hadn't been done before?
Nothing to this scale. It's fairly unprecedented in terms of just the amount of information that's been generated from it and just the scale and the number of different projects all happening at one time. It's a lot to take in. There's a lot of information there.
Yeah, I didn't realize it was like all of that information. I always assumed it was kind of the biodiversity of that MPA, but that's really awesome that it includes like the socioeconomic of like status of the region and the intertidal areas and the human usage. That's a lot of information.
It's going to be really helpful to have all that together
in one place. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. And this type of information really, it sometimes increases value over time, because if you can do this broad sweeping characterization, and this is inside and outside MPAs too. Mm-hmm. A lot of these study sites had their reference sites and other areas. So we have a really good documentation, just a really solid benchmark to go back to over time. So, you know, if we continue to have long-term monitoring data sets, going back to the beginning will be really important, looking at that original starting point in time, kind of drawing a line in sand and saying, going back to it to compare over time.
Sweet.
Yeah, awesome. Really sweet. So so that was kind of all the results from phase one. Was there any kind of thing that was striking to you in those results, like something you weren't expecting or anything like that?
Yeah. Oh boy, where to start? It started in 2007 on the Central Coast. That was where the baseline started, and now it's just ending here on the North Coast. I mean, I think first I would mention just the sheer amount of information produced from this process, from that 10-plus year effort. In total, it was something like 35-plus individual baseline monitoring projects. They each produced a peer-reviewed technical report. Some of them did more publications. We had a number of other summary documents, memos, and of just the data, the sheer amount of data produced from this is certainly unprecedented. With respect, maybe for the North Coast, I could just say a couple of things about the North Coast since it's our backyard and we just completed it. I think you have to mention the unusual warm water conditions that happened from 2014 to 2016.
Oh, I kind of remember that. Did anyone ever find out what caused that warm water incident, or was it just?
Yeah, there's a number of things. One of the baseline projects was an oceanographic project led by Dr. Eric Bjorkstad of NOAA and HSU, and so he looked at 26 years of oceanographic data and a lot of fine scale oceanographic indicators. And basically, that period 2014 to 2016 was a large anomaly of warm conditions, and it's part of this greater trend throughout the northeastern Pacific Ocean called the blob, or more technically the North Pacific Marine Heat Wave. Uh-huh. But people kind of like to call it the blob.
More fun.
It's a cooler, yeah. It's a cooler name. That was officially the scientific name when it first came out. We've never really seen something like this come through. And so basically it was just a persistent, long-standing mass of warm water conditions that affected the entire Northeast Pacific Ocean, including the North Coast. And that brought on persistent and unprecedented harmful algal blooms, for example, that lasted for a really long time. And then combined with a huge El Nino event, 2015 to 2016 was one of the largest El Nino events we've seen since the 97-98 and 82-83 events. So you got these large-scale, unexpected events that took place right smack dab in the baseline monitoring period. And again, that underscores the importance of this long-term monitoring data collection to be able to tease this out and say, well, is this normal or is it not? And because we had that long-term data set that Dr. Bjorkstad looked at, we were able to determine this is certainly anomalous.
Oh, that must have been kind of scary.
Yeah. It's
yeah.
Cascading effects throughout ecosystems, for sure.
So this data, it's available to the public, or is it, yeah?
It is.
If somebody else needed it for their research, they'd be able to use it?
Yeah, that's a really good point. And to support ongoing, independent, additional analyses, that's another, I'm glad you brought that up. That's a really important aspect of this baseline data, too, so it can be used by anybody who wants it. So it definitely is available to the public. Right now on oceanspaces.org, we have all this information available. And moving forward, we're developing an information management system which will house all of the data moving forward. So data is really important to us, and it's really important to make it freely available to the public. And so all of this state-funded information will be publicly accessible.
Oh, that's great. That'll help out a lot of people with research and things.
Yeah, I would imagine. Mm-hmm. And you had community meetings, too, to kind of present this information to the public. Mm-hmm. In early November, was it?
It was, which I guess was like a month ago.
Wow. Yeah, right. Wow.
Yeah, we did a little road show. So we had, we called them community gatherings, and we were in Crescent City, Eureka and Fort Bragg in consecutive days, November 1 through 3. And that was a fun event. We had over 80 participants who joined. We increased in participation as we decreased in latitude, meaning Fort Bragg had the most people and Crescent City the least.
Interesting.
But Crescent City, that the night of that meeting was also Game 7 of the Major League Baseball World Series, so that didn't help.
A lot of priorities.
So much. Yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean, it was a big deal.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was a California team in it, although there was not a lot of Dodger fans up here.
Yeah, but it's the first time the Dodgers, I guess, had been in the World Series in a while.
A long time.
Very long time. So.
Yeah. So, you know, we had those meetings in three consecutive days, and that was great. There was something like 40 plus people showed up in Fort Bragg. There was like 30 in Eureka and around 10 in Crescent City. And so we shared a lot of the baseline monitoring information, some of the next steps, and just had an open floor just to discuss.
What were some of people's impressions of it?
Well, a number of people wanted to know how to keep it going. That we did hear that a lot, especially in Fort Bragg. You know, there was a lot of different people there too. So commercial fishermen, tribal members, citizen scientists, educators, interested public members. So depending on the person who asked the question, they had very different desires. So some of the fishermen were especially interested in those warm water conditions. And of course, they're seeing it firsthand. It's not a surprise to them. And so we got a lot of head nodding and just confirmation. Yeah, we've been seeing this too. And it's been having some cascading effects on fisheries as well. And then there was educators just interested in some of the questions you've asked. You know, where can we get this information? We had a ton of reports and summary documents available, way more than probably anybody knows what to deal with. There was a lot of information. And of course, that's all online too. And I think I was most happy to see some of the original stakeholders from the regional stakeholder group during the design process. We had this stakeholder group in the North Coast. I think it was like 32 members that actually put pen to paper and designed these MPAs that went into place in 2012. So it was pretty cool to see some of them and see that they're still engaged and still interested in what we're doing.
Mm-hmm. Some sweet. Well, do you have any more questions for Adam?
I guess just with phase one and coming to an end, just really briefly what that means for phase two, like what is, so if phase one is baseline, you were saying phase two is kind of this ongoing monitoring?
Yeah. So phase two is, it's statewide long-term monitoring. So that's planned to continue it for perpetuity. So right now we have annual funding from the state for $2.5 million moving forward annually. So the idea is that we're going to be drawing from this comprehensive baseline monitoring effort up and down the state to put together strategies and priorities across the entire state for statewide monitoring. One of the key things about the Marine Life Protection Act, an important requirement, is that we monitor, research, and evaluate select sites to inform adaptive management. And I don't know if that means much to you, but for us, it does. It means that not every one of, 124 MPAs we have in California can be monitored every year. Mm-hmm. So moving forward, I think an important priority is going to be drawing from that phase one baseline information to stitch together data and priorities across that statewide scale, build long-term monitoring data sets at select sites that can enable network evaluation across the entire state. That's one of the key requirements and goals that we have, is to manage and design these MPAs as a statewide network. So we don't know exactly what that's going to look like, but we know that we have a lot of information in place to be able to develop these data streams moving forward towards 2022. In fact, will be the first network performance review. So that's a big push. And
it's still a ways away, though.
It feels like it, but it'll it's come also up pretty close.
Fast. Yeah.
It's a lot of information to pull from, for sure. And in addition to that, we've had a number of other investments so far with phase two. So we've continued some of the data collection for some of the priority ecosystems. Rocky intertidal, mid-depth rock, nearshore subtidal rock ecosystems. We've continued funding some of those priority ecosystems as part of this beginning of phase two effort. And we're also going to be developing what we call an action plan. So a statewide MPA monitoring action plan, and that will lay out basically everything I've been talking about.
Awesome.
Sweet.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah.
Big things to come.
So, once again, people can find out all the information that you've gathered so far for the MPA monitoring program over at oceanspaces.org.
Yeah, that's where you can find all of the information and the resources right now. The Department of Fish and Wildlife also has a website for MPAs. If you go to wildlife.ca.gov, search Marine Protected Areas, you'll land on our homepage.
Oh, that's perfect.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Well, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, it's a pleasure.
Learned a lot.
Definitely learned a lot. And thanks for hosting Coastal Currents, Annie.
Thank you, Bailey.
And Coastal Currents is brought to you, of course, by Glasshouse Garden Supply. We're going to go ahead and take a short break, and then we'll get back into the music here in just a little bit. So make sure to stick around. You're listening to KHUM.
This has been a KHUM production. For more information, check out khum.com or search KHUM in iTunes.